Welcome to The Creationist, a podcast about people who create. I'm your host, Steve Waxman. As you know, I like to ask my guests about the inspiration for their creations. Sometimes it's a lightning bolt of imagination that gets a creation started. But sometimes it comes out of the tedium of a slow workday.
What's funny too is like creating the characters' names and like the basic situation of all this is us on the walkie. Like you can't, anyone watching at home can't see me do this, but I'm holding my right hand on where the little walkie would be while we're on set. And like while we're shooting, just talking back and forth about like what the names are and who these people are and how this is going to work out. Like it all started as that sort of simplistic thing while we're doing something else completely unrelated to that.
Indie filmmaker Justin McAleese and his friends began developing the mockumentary Brick Madness while they worked as hired techs on another film. Brick Madness takes place during a scandalous Lego competition, but we can't say Lego, so forget I even said that. What started as a joke concept to distract them from a slow day of filming turned into a 10-year passion project. In this episode of The Creationist, Justin shares the odyssey that Brick Madness took from its birth during downtime on a film set to its premiere in his hometown of Fresno, California.
Well, we were on set working on another movie here in Fresno, California. This is back in 2009. And honestly, the whole genesis of it was trying to create something a lot quicker than the movie that we were currently on. And there was nothing wrong with that movie at all by any means in terms of the production or speed or any of those things. It just seemed slow to us, having done considerably more indie projects and just like, you know, rushing through things and you know, student short films and that sort of level of production. So anyway, we wanted, in our minds, we could create this mockumentary, like a simple mockumentary concept. We could get everyone in a room for a few days. We could bang out some improv and it would be super fun and we would be done. And then we would have a movie in, you know, a few months, however that works. And it would be awesome. And that was 11 years ago, 12 years ago now almost, that we had that concept. So clearly that did not work out quite as planned. And part of that was just that the project itself, I think, got better in our minds. And we realized that we cared more about it than we initially had. So a lot of things like start on a lark, you know, and you have an idea that this is just some goofy little idea that we'll just do real quick. And then as it develops, they often snowball for one to get bigger and more complicated. But hopefully they also snowball into you caring more about them and thinking that, oh, there really is something there. And I think that's really what it became for us.
So what was the initial idea? We're going to do a mockumentary. How did you decide on bricks, mm-hmm. aka Lego?
Yeah.
How did you decide on bricks? And what was your initial conversation? I mean, you had to give it some structure at the beginning.
I think it was, you know, the way that I approach making stories in the most simplistic of manner, and this doesn't mean you're going to get the best, you will not get the best answer out of this guaranteed or anything because it's sort of procedural, but I think that there's a way to create stories, and this is why I'm explaining this is sort of how it went, is like, okay, what kind of movie do we want to do? All right, well, we have a crew here and we might as well include the crew. Okay, so then it's a mockumentary. Like we already decided that right off the bat. That's just like a simple thing. You're like, okay, well, if you're going to make a mockumentary, that's going to be probably funny. Okay, well, if you're going to do that, then we should have a group of people. And this is sort of stealing from, you know, a Christopher Guest type concept, is like, if you're going to have a group of people, then they should be competing at something. Okay. What are they competing at? I don't know. What's something that A, we like, B, we have access to a little bit, and C, people can be very serious about that other people don't think is all that important or all that worthy of being serious about. Okay, well, what could that be? And so then we just spit out a couple ideas, and then pretty quickly we're like, okay, Lego checks all of those boxes. Like I loved Lego when I was a kid. I used to play with it all the time. A lot of my friends did. And I have some of those pieces sitting here, and that seems like something that people could compete in. Do we know that that exists or that anyone actually cares about that real time right now? I don't know. We hadn't done any research yet, but it seemed like a fun thing. And I think whenever you're creating comedy, you always want, in my opinion, the delta between the ego or the confidence of someone in what it should be and what it actually is, like that's a huge source of comedy. So if someone is completely overconfident about something, but anyone from the outside could see that there's no real reason to be confident, or your confidence is in something that shouldn't matter to anyone else, then there's a lot of potential fertile ground for comedy there. And so you just amp up that specific relationship. And so right off the top, we're like, okay, so who do we have as these characters, and how can we make them think that this world is far more important than it actually is? Because we know that'll be funny. We know that there's like funny things that can happen given that scenario. So we just kept going from there. What's funny too is like creating the characters' names and like the basic situation of all this is us on the walkie. Like anyone watching at home can't see me do this, but I'm holding my right hand on where the little walkie would be while we're on set. And like while we're shooting, just talking back and forth about like what the names are and who these people are and how this is going to work out. Like that, it all started as that sort of simplistic thing while we're doing something else completely unrelated to that.
So, okay, how many of you were involved in this conversation that was happening during the shoot of this other movie?
I don't know, 4, 5, 6 of us. I mean, whoever's on the walkie on our G&E and camera, it's like 10 people or whatever that were on set at that moment. But, you know, probably like my brother and I and 2 other people are sort of weighing in.
So this is strictly amusing yourselves?
Yeah. Just goofy stuff while we're hanging out. Something else to do, you know?
What were you doing on that film set? What was your responsibility?
I was a camera operator. Operator. My brother was an electric. I think he was an electric. And one of the other guys was a grip. Basically, those were like the 3 main people that were probably discussing all this stuff.
So then what happened next? I mean, you're having this goofy conversation over walkie-talkies. Mm-hmm. You leave later that day and, you know, sit down over coffees or beers and you start, let's start putting this down on paper. This sounds like a pretty good idea.
Yeah, I think, because I'm not particularly good at keeping a whole ton of concepts in my head. Like I want to purge them, and to purge them to me is to write it down. So I don't know if I started writing down stuff the first day or not. And obviously you try to expunge as much as possible, come out as with many ideas as possible, as fast as you can, and then sort of edit later. You know, you don't want to self-edit as you're going, because then you sort of, it's too limiting. So did that process and then just kept working through the next couple of days. And then I think as most things go, a month later, everyone else forgot about it or didn't care or thought it was like, oh, that thing. Yeah. That was last week. Who cares? But then I thought it was a good idea and I wanted to continue with it basically.
So how long was it till you guys started getting serious? Like the group started getting serious about it. And when did you start putting,
within 2 years, a year, we were like, had a decent amount of it. What do you want to say? Maybe we sketched out the general ideas of what was going to happen within a year or so. I ended up doing a number of other movies right after that. Wasn't really around this and that. So, you know, those things ebb and flow, the actual creation process ebbs and flows. As other things happen in your life. And so it was probably on the back burner for a while. And then we got together and then we started doing like writing groups. So we would either have 4 or 5 people sit and just discuss this stuff for a few hours. We did that a few times. Like in different groups, we would sort of bring in and take out different people that were not a part of the other group. So we probably had like 10 people, 10, 12 people maybe. Weigh in on this at any given time. So our writer's room was expanding and decreasing depending on who was available and who we thought was funny and had good ideas. And so we would take some of that and then we would, you know, write everything down. We basically had a stenographer or whatever. She would take all these ideas and write them down as fast as we could spit them out. And then we would edit it later and look at it and see what we liked and what we didn't.
So is there a point where you decide, let's do this. This is for real. Let's go.
I don't know that there was a super specific point, but it definitely kept building in importance in my mind. And I think when you start, probably what the first thing was that like legitimized it maybe is when we realized that Ricky Six would be Anthony Taylor and started doing some interviews of him. I think I and I might have my timelines wrong on this stuff, but we were doing interviews of people that would be in the movie, characters that would be in the movie later, and we were doing them for a specific thing called the Beyond the Bricks. These little vignettes we have, and I always wanted those to be like Behind the Music, that sort of thing, or E True Hollywood Story. And so we were getting basically a bunch of interviews that we could include in those and sort of working out our world and our characters real time as those were happening. So we were essentially writing as we were going, improv, but not improv within a whole scene of a bunch of people, but improv within the interviews. And so that would, that helped us form who these characters were and what the situations were going to be in a, hopefully an organic way, in terms of we were writing, plus we were just spitting out ideas, plus we were actually recording stuff that wasn't necessarily anything to do with that, you know, that was, that could come from the mind of the person we were interviewing and didn't need to be hobbled by what we had already talked about.
It's interesting you bring up E True Hollywood Stories, because I was, you know, one of the things about when I think that when most people hear the term mockumentary, I mean, they think of things like Spinal Tap and all those Christopher Guest movies, Dog Show, and things like that, which this certainly is, but it's also a mishmash. There's a, you know, E True Hollywood Stories. There's also a little bit of America's Most Wanted on there.
Yeah, right. You've seen the movie.
Absolutely. I've seen it a few times, actually. And I was wondering, is that a part of, did you see it working out that way? Or was it just a part of, this is the process we're going through, this is the stuff that we have that's building up the characters, so let's expand on what the idea of mockumentary is?
My main goal in this, like personally, aside from it being funny and us just making memorable characters and things like that, my main goal was to build as real of a world as possible, or at least as deep of a world as possible. So it was important to me, especially in those Beyond the Bricks, those little sub featurettes within the movie, is to make those as complete as possible. So everything, I think, was informed by that, in terms of whatever we needed, we wanted it to be real outside of the movie, outside of the mockumentary. And so if you watch those things, like, for instance, you know, and these are really nerdy details that probably no one ever cares about, but like there's a thing where we're talking about Ricky Max Grand, and he is he's on a newspaper and all that, or he's on like the ticker on an ESPN type thing. Like, I did all the research. I know exactly what happened. Whatever's on screen right there is exactly what happened that day in real life, that day, 8 years before. Like, what's on the Lycos website is like what happened in on that day at that time, when that would have happened. So I try to do my best to use the Wayback Machine or whatever it happens to be to like accurately place these people in real time in our real world, so that it felt like it was real. And that, I think, informed a lot of my other choices of like coming out with corollaries of what would happen in real life with cops or whatever, but making them a similar version. So I don't think we were trying to lampoon those concepts. I think we were trying to live within the world that would be if these things were real. That was more important to me.
So do you remember who the first characters were that you guys came up with?
Yeah, Ricky Six and Max Grand. Those okay. were for sure. And then I just knew that I was going to be in it. My brother was going to be in it, because I wanted, egotistically speaking, just wanted to be in it. It would be fun. But that Ricky Six was very early on. You're like, okay, well, we got to have a guy that has, they both have to have nicknames. How do we have him have nicknames? Okay. What if he names himself every time he wins a championship, he changes his name? That's a great idea. That sounds like a super obnoxious, arrogant thing to do. Perfect. That's what we want. And so you just like inform those choices by like, what's the most arrogant choice here? Okay, that's what that guy's going to do. All right, how do we mock him outside of that? What is he overcompensating for? Oh, his name is not a very good name outside of that. Rashad Chauncey Lipschitz. That's like an objectively crappy name. Okay, good. So then you have that ammo. Anyone, my character specifically, and other characters like get to make fun of him while he gets to pretend like he's not that person. That, and then Max Grand, we're like, how can we have a good name? And these are all day one, like literally day one things, I think, just as we're talking out loud, that stuck the entire time. the guy who plays Max Grand is Alan Agazarian, Armenian roots. And we're like, okay, so it's got to be like an Armenian type name. How do we get it to where it's going to be a nice little easy to remember, simple nickname based on his real name? So we're like, okay, Lomax Grandominian is a very Armenian, like, that sounds like a sort of a different name than most people would, you know, it's a typical American name. And you can make that into Max Grand. You got a good name. That's fun.
So you had Max Grand as the character's name before you had an actor who was Armenian.
No, he was one of the guys. So Alan Agazarian was one of the, he was the grip on set. Yeah. So he was running lights and stuff like that. Ricky Six, we had the name before we had a person. He was actually one of the later ones we figured out. And that was one of those things too. It just like for anyone out there who's creating things, a lot of times the most obvious solutions, what do you want to say? If you don't, the first thing you think of is probably wrong, but because it's the most obvious, but if you go through all the obvious things and then still don't have an answer a month later, maybe an obvious thing is your best answer and you skipped over it because it seemed too obvious. So I think there's definitely a paradoxical situation there. We realized Anthony was like going to be the best for this role. And I don't know why we didn't realize that sooner. It was very odd in casting because he's one of our friends. He's a guy we work with basically not everyone, but 7 out of 10 of the people in this movie are people that we knew and worked with and were friends with actively while making them, you know, before making the movie.
Okay, well, to that point, I said, you know, can you go through a little bit about, you know, some of the cast members that have experience that people might recognize?
Yeah, you don't necessarily. Laura Howard hasn't been in a ton of stuff, but you've seen her on TV. She's been in like Best Buy commercials and Capital One commercials with Jennifer Garner and stuff like that. But she plays Delilah White, so she might have a recognizable face. Richard Speight Jr., I had been on a movie with him 2010, maybe somewhere in there. I was on a movie with him out in Missouri. And so I just asked him if he wanted to be in it, basically. And he was super cool about it. And we figured out what his role would be to where we could get it done in one day, basically. And went down to Hollywood and shot it at my buddy's bar, essentially. And so he was one of them. And then the Sand brothers, Jaden, well, three of them actually, but the ones that actually have like speaking roles are Jaden and Cole. And they are little powerhouses. And Jaden had been in, so basically they were on a movie that we had worked on the year before. And then while we were doing this, we're like, hey, we need these kids in there and they're going to be great. And they're good little actors and let's put them in here. And we had shot half of Jaden's scenes, and then 6 months later we were going to shoot the other half of his scenes, and we had a very protracted shooting schedule in a variety of ways. And so when Jaden came back, Jaden and Cole and their mom, and we were like, so what have you guys been up to? And the mom, Tammy, was like, oh, well, we worked on another thing that was like similar to this sort of. And I'm like, oh, someone else is doing a Lego mockumentary. That sounds weird. And then she's like, yeah, sort of something like that. Like she, you know, she was NDA'd and all that, and she couldn't explain it to me or anything. And then we found out, we're like, oh, the Lego movie. This kid is the main kid in the Lego movie. That's crazy. And so that was a come to Jesus moment for me being in the theater 7 years ago or whatever that was, a long time ago when my movie wasn't anywhere near completed. And that was just a reckoning. That was just hard to like see, because they had started after me more or less, and they'd already taken my kid and put him in it was just a weird moment seeing it in the theater and all that. And it's a great movie, but so you would definitely recognize him from that movie. He was in our movie first, and our movie got finished after.
Poor kid's going to be typecast now.
Yeah.
As yeah, the Lego kid.
The Lego kid. That's all you get.
So how much of the film is actually scripted?
70%, I think. You know, like none of the scenes essentially are... we didn't improv from scratch any of the scenes, I don't think. But we improvised a lot of the interviews, and then found ways to combine them later. I don't think we shot anything that like had action or actual like plot in it without knowing exactly what we were going to do. But there's a decent amount of lines that say Anthony comes up with that I had no idea what he was going to say, and he just said it and it was great, and we used it in the movie. So I think we had a exceedingly specific structure and everything was notated out, but then we had room for improv within that, sort of like you would do on a what's the guy's name, Todd, some of those guys where they do Linorama with the Todd Phillips, when they do the Linorama stuff with Will Ferrell and some of those other people, like that sort of group that does a lot of movies. It's a little like that. As a filmmaker, I don't know that I love those things sometimes, because they feel very, you get out of the mode of actually having real characters saying real things, and you start to get into the mode of like, these are just stand-up comedians just trying to pitch jokes, which is weird. It sort of takes me out of the reality of those situations. So I don't know. It's odd to me sometimes, because I just feel like I'm no longer watching a movie. Yeah.
All right.
So we try not to do that specifically, but we try to let people make up stuff on the spot if it was funnier than what we had written, basically.
Mm-hmm. So when did you start trying to raise funds to actually make this thing?
Did a variety of rounds of trying to pitch it and trying to sort of in the old way of pitching any movies is like, well, these other movies 6 years ago that made a bunch of money that were rampant successes in Hollywood, and here's how much they cost and here's how much they made. And I think so we tried to do that and sort of almost got some people to sign on the dotted line, thought about crowdfunding, thought about all that. My video production business is fairly successful. We stay busy all the time, essentially. And I just realized pretty quickly that, like, say if I was going to do a crowdfunding thing, I knew how much time that took to do. And I knew that my hourly wage would probably be less than it would just doing my actual business. So I was like, I'd rather, that stuff's so much logistics, and it's so much stuff that I'm not great at to produce like a good crowdfunding campaign, that I just decided to do my business. And I was like, at the end of the day, the business and me personally, we just paid for it. So we didn't have outside investors that actually put in money, aside from the people that are in it that put in their time.
I'm trying to figure out how to word this question with regards to Lego.
Okay.
I'm presuming contractually there is no way that you could use the words Lego.
No, we didn't. Yeah, we decided very early on that we were not going to be able to do that and to avoid it at all costs, basically. I just didn't, we weren't a big enough sort of company or, you know, we didn't have enough clout to be able to go to Lego and be like, hey, we want to make a movie with your stuff. Like, I just didn't even want to enter into that. And I knew that there was other situations in the past. A director of photography I worked with had done something and they used Lego and then they got sued and this and that. And I knew that they just probably weren't interested in our podunk little movie. So we didn't even try, honestly.
The materials that you're using, are they Lego materials or are they knockoff?
There's probably some knockoff in there, but I would say in general, it's all Lego because we're actually at Lego conventions. And I mean, within that world too, when you go to Lego conventions, they are not called Lego. They are often sponsored by Lego. Lego is there. They have a presence and they're a big part of it, but they're just called brick conventions. So there's, you know, enough of a veil between the two to where everyone gets to stay in their lane. And we did that same thing.
So, okay. So then that really leads right into my next question, which is the thing I was most curious about, which was, where did all of the Lego creations come from? Like, there's a lot of stuff there that's pretty unique that had to be built.
So much stuff. We went, so a guy that was working for me at the time at my video production company is Carl Merriam. And I'm trying to remember, but I don't think he had told us so clearly that he was so into Lego. We didn't know that he actually built it, or it was like in the back of my head, but I had just become snowblind to the fact, and it didn't, I just forgot, whatever. Anyway, we're telling him about the movie and he's like, I love Lego. And we're like, what do you mean? He's like, I build it all the time. And I was like, oh shit, that's true. Okay. Well, what do you know about the rest of, where could we go find, you know, when we first thought of it, we thought we were going to have to just supply all that stuff. And we hadn't really just like got to the hard part of figuring that out yet. But then once we realized that, oh, there's actual Lego conventions and there's actually one in California here and we can go to it. And then we can like scope it out and get as many interviews as we can of actual people that use Lego in real life and all of that stuff. And so we built any of the convention scenes are built around the Bricks by the Bay convention in Santa Clara. We went there and shot for 2 years. We were there for 3 years. And that was a big part of what we did. So that those are people that know Carl, or people that we went up to and said, hey, we really love your thing. We want to get you on this movie. We're going to interview you. And then we just sort of fill in the specifics of our world and have them talk about it. We didn't tell them what to say. We just had them come up with their own words based on the scenarios that we presented. So that's where all that Lego came from. And then we built a bunch specifically for the movie. Jason Wada also worked for me at the time. And he and Carl and some other people built stuff specifically for us. And then we just sort of leveraged other things that were already built to be able to unbuild on camera. The words Brick Madness that come at the beginning of the movie, that was like a huge undertaking, building that specifically for the movie, obviously. So yeah, we found, you know, 3 or 4 different ways to get all this stuff on camera.
Okay. The other things somewhat related to that, at least in my head, is the merch opportunities that there were with this movie. In particular, I think the very first thing that came to my mind when I watched the film the first time was, oh my God, I got to get one of those Ricky Six t-shirts, property of Ricky Six t-shirts.
Yeah, the Minion t-shirts. I thought I had more because I was going to use one for something the other day. And yeah, I don't know if I have any left. I mean, I have the original. I have the graphics and stuff that we put on there. Yes, those are quite funny. And yeah, we just wanted, I don't remember. I came up with the Minion concept early on about, I just wanted him to have some sycophants. And yeah, what we've been successful in doing so far, which has been really fun, is we put together the Brickmaster Edition. So Brickmaster Edition has a little Wyatt minifig. So an actual Lego minifig, totally custom made by this guy, DJ out of sort of the Bay Area, who's been really good. And he made these things. And then we also have a couple different types of magnets. And then we also have the Bricks candy, the Bricks bits that we talk about within the movie and some other stuff. And we made like a little custom 3D printed camera and all this stuff. So anyway, we have that sort of merch, and we've sold posters in the back in the past. I'd love to sell the Wyatt has a backpack, Ricky 4 backpack. I forget exactly which one it is. Anyway, if those were like reasonable price to make, I would love to make those and sell 100 of them. They're so funny to me. Yeah, there's so much dumb stuff in there. The we were trying to like, well, yeah, it's on one of the magnets, but Ricky's his fragrance that he came out with is so stupid to me that I tried to make stuff that if I had nothing to do with this movie that I would think was so ridiculous that I would want to buy. You know, that's what appeals to me.
So how long did it take you to shoot?
We probably, I sort of go forth. We go back and forth. We probably spent, I don't know, a week and a half to 2 weeks actually on set, like with everyone there, like all hands on deck, sort of shooting in a traditional style. And then we did weeks of other shooting. And then literally, I don't know, 3 months ago, 2 months ago, I did the last couple images. We, you know, we had little fill-in stuff. So we've been shooting since 2010 or something. So there have been pieces there the entire time. Almost every year of that, we had shot something, which is a lot.
So the final edit was 2020?
We put together 90... We did a cinema... premiere like twice here in Fresno, one at a Edwards Theater and then one at a local theater, the Tower Theater. So we did that in 2017. And then I went back and chopped it down like another 10 minutes, made some changes, fixed some stuff, added some things. And then that didn't come out. That wasn't done until, like I said, literally like 3-4 months ago was the final shots I put in.
So where can people find the movie right now?
Yeah, currently it is on Amazon, so you can buy it on Amazon. We are not doing the free streaming on Amazon Prime. We will do that at some point probably, but to recoup any of our costs and sort of make back our money and try to make another one, we are selling all the copies right now. And then you can go to the distributor's website, which is littlesisterint.shop. And you can find that there. And that's how you can buy a DVD, a Blu-ray, or you can buy the Brickmaster edition with one of those types of discs with all that fun stuff I discussed earlier. If you go to Brick Madness Movie or BrickMadness.com, rather, we have a bunch of URLs. BrickMadness.com will get you to either of those things as well. That's probably the simplest way to do that. But if you go look on Amazon right now, Brick Madness, it pops up. And I would say that if anyone wants to go on there, they want to spend their $10 and they don't like it. If you think the movie sucks, we'll be happy to money back guarantee your money. I'll send you $10 right in Venmo. I have no problem with that if you think my movie sucks, because I think it's good and I think most people will like it if they get a chance to see it. And I think it's hopefully the people on screen were able to bring something new and hilarious and interesting to the genre.
Well, that's an awesome no loss deal.
Yeah, exactly.
And you know, I've watched the movie 3 times and have laughed all 3 times. So, well done, young man. Well done, young man.
I really appreciate that. Yeah, I mean, it means the world to me. It's I don't know if you suffer from this, but as an artist, I want to hear so much good feedback about what I did, right? You just want to talk about your thing and you want to hear how great it is. And like, it's such a heroin situation. Like, it's never enough hearing about how great your thing is. You just want to hear it over and over again. But then also I'm like, that makes me feel weird. You're making me blush. You know, I feel weird when you say how great it is. So don't say that. But say it a little bit. Say it a little bit more.
No, I didn't say it was great. I just said I laughed a lot and I watched it 3 times.
Well played. Fair enough. No, it I mean, and I think what we try to do, and I don't know if you've experienced this at all, is I try to draw a distinction between what is funny, what makes you laugh, and what is comical later. Like what's gonna make you laugh the second or third time you see it. And so we tried our damnedest, and in my brain just works in a way where things are very sort of categorized. And we tried to make things that would be funnier the second or third time you saw it, and other things that were like so obvious, sort of broad humor that they would be funny for everyone, for the most amount of people possible, the first time they saw them. And so it was our intention for this dumb little movie to operate on multiple levels and not have people realize it, but sort of get something out of it later, hopefully.
If you're looking for a few good laughs and want to support independent filmmaking, you can rent or buy Brick Madness now on Amazon.com. I hope that you enjoyed this episode of The Creationists. If you haven't already, please take a moment to follow us on your favorite podcast platform, and new episodes will be delivered to you as soon as they go live. Rating and reviewing the podcast helps us find new listeners as well. And if you have any friends that might be interested in what we're doing, please let them know that we exist and share the link. The Creationist is mastered in post-production by Paul Ferrand. I'm Steve Waxman, and I created this podcast.